Mother, man.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem! What's up, brother?
What's going on, Hoss, man?
This is some new setup here we got going
on. Yeah, getting this new gear that's going on in the studio when we get the new one built, testing it out. So
yeah, we're doing a test run of the new setup with the new interface we got and the headphone splitter and doing it first time. So hopefully this one goes okay. So appreciate you guys.
I hope it sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, man, we're doing fucking episode 29, man.
October coming to an end.
Yeah, and it's the night before Halloween.
Yes.
So that's cool. Definitely adding to the spookiness of it all.
Just had the parade go past the house right before we start to record, dude.
Dude, that was so funny. <It's> for everybody listening, in Hayworth, little town that I live in, and we record this podcast in, is... they do their Halloween parade. And so I had seen something on Facebook that they were going to do it tonight at 6:30, which is like pretty much when we start doing
this.
Close
to when we start doing it.
So it's like, are you fucking kidding me? And then Chris, you went outside to smoke a cigarette and it's like literally a parade marching down the street right next to my house.
Next to the house.
Like a high school marching band and the whole...
But luckily, it was just the kids out doing their costume parade.
Right.
So it was only like block and a half long. It wasn't like a full-on parade.
It was hilarious because the way it sounded was like fucking Ohio State was here.
So. Like legit.
Oh, yeah, it did. I'm like, are you kidding me? How the fuck are we going to do this up here?
So, God damn.
Yeah, so I'm like right a house away from Main Street, which is right where they were. So I'm glad it's over, but I'm glad the kiddies got to get out and do
their Halloween stuff.
So, but the 29th one, man, like you said, last one of the month, we were doing the horror theme all
and
month.
I know we're doing your favorite, so...
Tonight, Edgar Allan Poe, definitely my all-time favorite.
Hell yeah.
And definitely excited to do it with it being the night before Halloween. Now, last week, we did episode 28, of course, on...
H.P. Lovecraft, yeah.
Yeah, now, what did you... I know you weren't as familiar with Lovecraft, but I know that was cool. We talked about some interesting
stuff.
Oh, yeah,
definitely did. I found out some stuff about Lovecraft that I obviously had not known before.
Yeah, he's very, he's somewhat obscure, almost kind of cult-like following.
Yeah,
really.
But a lot of people, like you said, cult-like, as the cult life got a little bigger with Lovecraft, it kind of gained more notoriety, and that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I think a lot of people had commented that they didn't realize he was involved with, like, the Reanimator and some of that other stuff.
Right, yes, yes.
That was, like, totally digging it, but didn't even realize it was Lovecraft.
Oh, yeah. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah. So definitely a cool segment or an episode on that. And we did the Revocation segment with CK.
You guys haven't heard Revocation? I was just talking to Big Mike today. He just listened to that new album. He's like, dude, that motherfucker rips. I'm like, shit, yeah, it does.
Exactly. Yeah, Revocation. And we did that with CK. And speaking of CK.
Oh, he's calling in tonight.
Live call.
Live one tonight for sure.
So we're definitely psyched. We always love it when CK calls in.
It's always better.
Yeah, it is always better. We get a lot of good feedback about him on here when we're live all three together.
Right.
So it's great. Now, he's going to do his segment on Lizzie Borden, the band, for obvious reasons with the Halloween theme. But, you know, it's cool, very theatrical type band.
Yes.
More of an old school, traditional type band. But, you know, it's cool. So we're going to talk about Lizzie Borden. And I don't know much about them.
I know the chick. I know what she did.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. We all know about her, right? Who was it that Time Suck that just did the Lizzie Borden episode? It was really good.
I'm not.
If you're not familiar with the podcast Time Suck, it's great. Dan Cummins,
yeah, the comedian,
and he did some. He did one very recently on Lizzie Borden.
The murderer, not the band,
right? Yes, and he dispels some of the theories. It's very interesting. It's worth listening.
Definitely,
he does some really good stuff. This week, he's doing Ed and Lorraine Warren,
right?
The demonologist, which is
that's
cool.
A good one.
Yeah, so that's I'm going to listen to that. I haven't yet. So yeah, we're doing Poe, which is awesome. My all-time favorite is The Telltale Heart, which was the story that first got me into Edgar Allan Poe, because I remember my uncle had made cassette tapes.
That's fucking cool, man.
Of Vincent Price reading Poe stories, like on vinyl. He recorded them to a cassette.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then gave me the cassettes. And I remember, like, in the dark, like, we'd be sitting there listening to it. And, you know, Vincent
dude,
Price.
I was going
to
say the fact Vincent
fuck,
Price doing the fucking recordings, dude. That's fucking awesome.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. I mean, Vincent Price is the fucking ultimate voice for horror, you know? So, yeah. And the stories, you know, the way Poe writes, especially that one, because the guy's going crazy. And at the end, he just goes totally nuts and rips the floor up and pulls the body up, you know.
You've got to get rid of it.
And so, yeah, and the cops are there. And, of course, you know, we all know how that story's going to end. But it's a great one, and I always enjoyed it. So I have a little fun at the end. We'll wait, of course, till the very end when we do the karaoke.
Yeah.
Inspired. All I'm going to say is inspired by the telltale heart or the word heart. So,
yeah.
You can leave that to wonder, but you'll be blasted with it at the end of the episode. You will have no choice but to listen to it at that point. So, thanks to everybody who came out to Tales of Terror.
Yes, thank everybody that came out to that. That was a great experience, man.
It was. It was really cool. Sue Rovins, the author from Normal, Illinois, put it together. She did a great job. Her husband, Charlie... the Quaker Goes Deaf played music between stuff. He's a good dude. It was really interesting, though, because when it started, I know we were both kind of like, oh, my gosh, because everybody was, like, really chill.
Yeah, and, like, it was like you said, it was like a dinner party because there was all these people sitting there eating. Nobody like us.
No, no, they were all, like, you know, professional types, you know, people, couples out.
Right.
Older couples, middle-aged to older couples, but looked, like you said, not people like wearing Cannibal Corpse shirts. Like
definitely not that.
And they're sitting at tables and they're eating. And
like,
so
all right, we'll see how this works out.
Yeah.
But as the night progressed, there got to be more people.
Right.
And then as we got on, like, it was awesome. They didn't know what was happening.
No, everybody, it was great. We really appreciate everybody that came. Pete and Victoria and Chase and everybody. Maggie and Adam.
Michael, Stacy. Thank you all, dude.
Yeah, my kids were out. It was just fantastic.
Like, even the people, like we were saying, was already there when we got there. We could see it, and they were laughing. They were having a good time. So.
Yeah, there was a lady, like, right in front of me that I was watching, because, you know, with the lights, you can't see much past the first row.
Yeah, not far.
Some people don't understand that. Like, at a show, they're, like, waving and shit, and then afterwards, they're like, dude.
I was right over there. It's like, dude, I can't see you, man.
It's just shadow. So anyway, she was fucking laughing, and as raunchy as we were getting,
it was pretty cool.
She was laughing, so that was really
fun.
Thank
you, Chris and Night Shop, and thank you, Sue.
Yeah, totally. That was a great time, and we've got the video. We just started our YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
Murder Metal Mayhem.
First thing to ever be put up on it.
It's up there, so you can check it out. It's about a half hour long, and you can see it for yourself how we did, and turned out good. It was a great time.
Shit.
And, you know, thanks to everybody continuing to listen, man. You guys are the shit.
Yeah, and letting your friends know, and they be letting their friends know, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of the people I brought with me to this event, Jess, she is a new fan, man.
Hell yeah.
She said she listened to one of the episodes, and then just, like, works at Gaffney, and, like, has, like, the whole department listening to this shit.
Thank you.
So thanks, Jess. And Kara was there, but Kara and Jess, friends from Hayworth, were there. And so, yeah, that's just a cool story, like you said, when people are turning friends on to the podcast. So we do appreciate that, guys, very, very much. So yeah, I think we're
let's do this shit.
We got a killer cage match.
Oh yes,
up.
We do got a killer cage match.
And that's
coming
a good
up.
One.
Talk a little bit about Trick or Troll, maybe.
Yes, you're going to talk Trick or Troll. I'm going to talk about going to see the new Halloween movie.
Yeah, because I haven't seen it yet. So.
Which is really good, and we're also going to do a killer cage match with
Jerry. No, sorry. David Berkowitz and Jim Jones. Yeah.
So Jim Jones of the Guyana tragedy, yeah. 900 people.
And it was
themselves.
Damn not Kool-Aid.
Yes. Flavor Aid.
It was Flavor Aid.
And then, of course, David Berkowitz, son of Sam. So
hopefully the neighbor dog don't start barking.
Yeah, because if that happens, I'm fucking running.
Right. Fuck that, dude.
Berkowitz
that's
might be downstairs or something. Who knows?
The dog made me do it.
Right, right. So that should be a funny killer cage match. And so I guess we're ready to dig in, bro.
Shit,
let's have
yeah,
a
let's
fucking
do that.
Good one. Fucking Steve Harris, Iron Maiden. That's another. I mentioned Geezer Butler last week, I think,
right,
as a bass playing influence. Steve Harris, dude, my God, the fucking
badass
shit he did with his fingers. Also, really cool tone, very, very innovative. Huge influence on me back in the early days.
Fucking A.
Murders in the Rue Morgue from Iron Maiden, because we're doing Edgar Allan Poe. We're trying to use some Poe-influenced music in this episode, so hopefully you guys dig
tying it.
Tying it in. Right, and dude, speaking of tying it in.
I know, you got that shirt on.
I got an Edgar Allan Poe shirt on, which has a cool saying at the bottom. Maybe if you could read it.
I became insane with long intervals of horrible sanity.
Yeah.
Quote Edgar Allan Poe.
Totally, yeah. That he is one fucked up dude, so I'm
That's
anxious
a great
to,
quote, man.
It is. I'm anxious to talk about him because he's just an icon. And I mentioned how important he was to me and how I kind of discovered horror and that sort of thing from listening to those crazy stories with Vincent Price. So, but he is an icon in the world of horror, suspense, and even beyond crime drama, mystery, and a lot of things, you know, poetry, but a lot of things people might not think that he would have written. He's really a wide-ranging...
Diverse.
Very much so. He's known for the horror and the suspenseful stuff.
And the gothic,
and
whatever.
That's what he did because he knew he had to do that to make money. That's what people wanted.
Yeah,
because
he did a lot more than that as well.
But he did. He started doing more and always was dabbling in other things. Very, very innovative for the time. But, you know, it's crazy he died so young, though. 40 years old, man.
The first author to try to make his entire living just off of writing.
Yeah,
and not have a job just doing the writing to make spare money or whatever.
Right.
He literally tried to do that.
Yes, he was very, very hell-bent on becoming, like you said, self-sufficient writing. And it was sad because he really couldn't do it.
Right.
Struggled all, you know, he had success, but died very young.
Yeah, not major success, but...
Well, he did with some of his work, but some not so much. He was just... It's a sad story because, you know, somebody dies young like that.
Yeah. And I'm 40, so like, I can't even imagine.
No. So, I mean, a lot of people were very influenced by him in such a short period of time, dying so young like that. But he was born in 1809 in Boston. So, you know, way back in the day, so to speak. But people, like you said, Chris, weren't writing for a living. So... Him doing that was very, very cutting edge.
Pretty much a lot of blue-collar work, like shipyards and shit like that.
Right, but oddly, you know, he came from parents that were both actors, so definitely different than, like you're saying, the blue-collar type work.
Yes.
His father, though, left the family a year later when he was born, or after he was born, and his mom died of tuberculosis soon
after. About a year after that, and it crushed him.
Yeah, he's an orphan. And, you know, he does have an older brother and a younger sister, but they weren't raised with him.
Yeah, they weren't raised together.
Yeah, because he went into the foster system and, you know, he was
put in
the
with
foster
John.
Parents were these people that were very wealthy,
right? John Allen,
right?
And that's then I thought I read somewhere that that's where he got the middle name Allen, and he didn't, but he didn't hardly use it. That's why his signature is Edgar A. Poe, not Allen.
Right, that's true. Yeah, when you look at his official signature, it shows it as with the A.
Right.
They definitely had a tumultuous relationship for sure.
Yes, yes.
They never formally adopted him. I mean, they raised him, but they were tough on him.
Right.
But
yeah.
At times they spoiled the shit out of him. So
at times he. Bad discipline, like horrible discipline.
Yes. Yeah.
So it was like, I got to make up for what I did yesterday kind of shit, was it? I guess.
Right.
I mean.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, they were just, you know, strange situation there for him. But they went to England for a few years. He went to school, I read, in Scotland. And then
some
they lived in
military academy or something, was it?
Yeah, well, then later he, when they came back to the U.S., It was
a boarding school in Scotland.
Yeah, boarding school in Scotland. But they moved back to Portland or to Richmond, Virginia in 1820. John Allen's uncle died, his foster father, and inherited a monstrous amount of money.
It was like almost 20 grand in today's money.
No,
20 million, I mean.
Yeah.
Almost 20 million in today's money. I think the number the number from back then, I think, was like 17,000 or something like that.
Yeah, isn't that
I'm
unbelievable?
Like, holy crap, dude.
Yeah.
17,000 turns into 20 million?
Right.
Fuck.
Yeah, so it was like a ton of land and money. I mean, he was rolling in it, you know. And he was already wealthy, so he was just...
And you got all that added coming in on it.
Right. And so Poe, you know, he becomes kind of estranged from his family, or his foster family, in his college years at University of Virginia due to some gambling debts.
See, and I was reading that. Were they his gambling debts, or were they...
I think so.
Allen's gambling
No,
debts.
I think
okay,
it
was
his.
It was his? Okay.
Yeah, because he was, as we both know, like hitting the bottle.
Yeah,
like
a little
hardcore.
Bit. A little bit, yes. Yeah, so, like, he wasn't getting money to be able to stay in college and keep his dorm and everything.
Right,
so
and he thought, hey, you got all this money, you know, why don't you help me out?
Basically give it to me, kind of, I guess.
Yeah, and I think John Allen was like, eventually, you know, like, hey, dude, like... You're
fuck
on
up.
Your own, man. You
I
know?
Guess he wasn't getting good grades and didn't have enough credits to stay in school either. So, like, he's like, well, if you can't stay in school, why would I pay for it?
Right. And so, yeah, he gets out of school. He moves to Boston, and he's going to try it on his own. He works as a newspaper writer using the pen name Henry Lerene.
Yeah.
Excuse the fuck out of me.
Yeah, I apologize, sir.
Right. But was struggling to survive. Then he joins the army, and he goes under the name Edgar Perry, lying about his age.
Yeah, so he could get in there.
Right, which was pretty common back then.
Back in the early days of...
Oh, yeah. The records were shitty. Right. People didn't have stuff. You know, it's not like you go to like the DMV.
Like, we need your records.
I need a state ID. You know?
No, they could just walk up and give some dumbass name.
Right.
All the time.
And they needed people, so of course, you know,
they're
going to
take
it. So they let him in. And this is when he began to publish some of his poetry. The first thing he published was a 40-page collection called Tamerlane and Other Poems. And I saw something on the web somewhere with a copy of that.
Yeah.
Recently sold for like $7 million. It was some insane amount of money.
Ridiculous number.
Because it's
I can
so
only
rare.
Imagine.
Because
there
wasn't that many of them. It's kind of interesting.
And it's his first published thing, though. Holy shit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a huge, huge thing. Or it is a huge thing to score one of those. That'd be cool to be like at a yard sale.
And you just see one, you're like,
damn,
and they got like 50 cents on it.
And other poems.
What do you say?
I'll give you a dollar. You know, here, just keep it. That's what I would do.
Here's
a buck. Thanks. Keep the change. Thank you.
And
get a hold of some literary dealer or something. But you'd keep it. That's cool. He does spend some time at West Point, but was discharged because he didn't want to be there. So he like got himself in trouble.
On purpose. And then he, like, in the trial, he pled not guilty because he knew they were going to give him a guilty anyway. Like, what the fuck?
And that they would have to kick him out. Yeah. That's what he wanted. He wanted to get kicked out.
That's so fucked, dude. He's like, how do I get out of the army? I'm just not going to do shit.
Yeah, exactly. Just got, like you said, didn't do anything and then got busted for not following
orders.
Yeah,
for being negligent at his duties or whatever. Yeah.
So he got out. He didn't want to be there, and I'm sure they didn't want him there much either. He publishes a second and third collection of poems. He continues to try to create a living writing, which is, like we know, both
hard,
really tough. That'd like, be like to, trying to do this podcast
and make this my us. Job. Yeah, like, this, that ain't happening, bro.
I think we'd be out on the street in, I don't know, a week.
In a van down by the river.
We would be in a van down by the river. So we don't have any Patreon or PayPal. We might have to start if we're going to be able to even think about that. So we'll see. So, but during this time, his foster mother dies of an illness. His foster father completely disowns him over constant arguments about money. And his brother dies of complications of alcoholism. So again. Yeah.
So like he's got all these people dying. Nobody cares about him really.
Right.
And that's pretty rough. It's going to make your head not think right.
Yeah. I mean, he's struggling big time. The alcoholism starts to take hold of him. I mean, he's really
pretty
getting
freaking
over
hard.
The top.
I mean, he was drinking before, like, whatever. And now he's, like you said, going over the top with ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really bad. But now in 1835, now this is some Springer shit.
Yeah, this is straight up. This is some fucked up shit.
Poe marries his 13-year-old cousin, Virginia, when he was 26. So he's 26, she's 13. Damn, bro. Dude. I mean, that's fucked up. And it's your cousin. I mean, what's up with that?
Dude, yeah. That is super fucked. And her mom was living with him too, right?
I think so, yeah. So
it's like,
a very strange arrangement
super
here.
Super fucked up.
I'm not quite sure. Now, I do know that in that era, that sort of thing happened.
It was common, yeah.
But come on, man.
Think about it now. I'm like, damn, dude, for real?
Yeah, that's rough.
Fuck.
But he now starts to, maybe it was that 13-year-old pussy, I don't know, but
whatever.
He starts coming
get a
around.
A little bit of success.
He starts achieving some, you know, notoriety.
Right.
He starts getting published in some newspapers, some magazines.
Yeah, with short stories and shit. So,
Yeah, I mean, he's starting to, you know, win some writing contests. Then he starts moving into some short stories. He also gains a reputation as a critic and editor, you know, and that's where people knew of him.
Right.
So his name was more known for that than it was as
for
a writer.
His writing.
But he just constantly kind of drip, drip, drip until it started to become noticed, you know.
Yeah, because he dropped his own, and there was it that first poem book, The Tamarinds and Other Poems? Wasn't that just under, like, maybe I'm thinking of another writing, just under a Bostonian?
Oh, you might be right. No.
Was it that one, or was it?
There is something I do recall and something
I
read here.
Not even nobody's name, just a Bostonian.
It's like anonymous, like that. Yeah, it is odd. But yeah, he always loved Boston. So yeah, that does sound very familiar. In 1840, though, he decides to start his own journal called The Stylus, but it never actually saw publication
before he died.
So he tried and kind of in theory and knew what he wanted to do, but never was able to pull it together. It's kind of weird. I didn't know anything about this, that he attempted to get a job with the presidential administration
and then his ass
of John Tyler.
Then his ass fucks up and doesn't even go to the movie. Or to the meeting, I mean.
Yeah, they're supposed to, like, interview, and, like, he pretty much had the job because his buddy hooked him up.
I think it was his son, Tyler's son, I believe.
Oh.
And he got him hooked up with this meeting and everything to be on the Tyler's presidential committee or whatever.
Right.
And he just doesn't fucking go, dude. Oh, my God, if you had the option to get a job, that badass, dude.
Right.
You're just not going to show up. I mean.
Yeah. He said he was sick, but then the dude knew it was just because
he was drunk. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, Poe is just constantly fucking up. He's got success, but he just can't pull his shit together. His drinking is just out of control. Now, his wife, Virginia, gets sick with tuberculosis in 1842. Drinking gets worse. He's in a bad way. Now he manages to move to New York to get a job with the Evening Mirror, and then later as the editor of the Broadway Journal. So he's all over the place.
His wife, when his wife got sick, what do you call it, a busted blood vessel in her throat, and that's yeah. all. And she kind of got better, but never really did.
Yeah, no, he kind of sloughed it off as a broken blood vessel, but she was really sick. Yeah. She had tuberculosis, which, you know, you're spitting up blood and stuff, so that's, but, you know.
Yeah, he's just like, I don't know, it's just a blood vessel, I guess.
Yeah, fucking... he didn't seem too concerned about it.
But he did love his wife a lot.
Yeah, he did. He did. He alienated himself by accusing the famous writer Henry Wadsworth Longfellow of plagiarism. And apparently Longfellow just kind of blew him off because he knew he was a drunk. But the rest of the writing community was like, dude.
Your book's fucked.
You're just fucked up. Like, stop it with this, you know.
Yeah, because
you're out of control.
He was talking some mad shit about Poe that wasn't true or whatever.
No, Poe was talking shit about him, and he just chose to just not even respond.
Oh, I'm thinking of a different book.
Yeah, Poe is just a critic, so he's criticizing.
Oh, yes,
so people
okay.
are getting mad at him about it, but he's just out of line. He's like really rude.
Right.
And then with that Longfellow, who was a famous writer, calling him, you know, plagiarist and shit, the dude like didn't even answer him because he just knew he was a mess. Like,
I'm done talking to you. Okay.
Yeah, he's just a fucking mess. Now, in 1845, though, Poe finally hits fucking pay dirt with the iconic poem "The Raven," which most people
know
of him
is.
From
the rap,
that.
Rap, rapping. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's a great poem.
The ladies seem to love it.
Yeah, the ladies like, do. Yeah,
like for real.
Yeah, no.
Like even in his day, everything I read, like the ladies loved it.
Yeah, yeah. It was like it made him a national sensation, which I was surprised with that because I had always thought or heard. That he was just never saw the success in his, you know, after death he did, or after death, you know, they did.
It's when he got made, like Lovecraft, basically.
Yeah, I mean, these guys don't realize it, but apparently with The Raven, he was like a household name.
Yes.
And it was very, very widely read and very highly regarded. I mean, it was really put him on the map. But again, the drinking, he just can't stop drinking and he just keeps, you know,
Non-stop.
Going downhill. Amazingly, though, dude, did you see he was paid $9 for The Raven to publish The Raven?
Oh, yes, I do.
$9.
So $9.
He reminds me of somewhat similar to Lovecraft, but also reminds me a little bit of Tesla, which is...
Oh, Tesla got fucked up.
He's an amazing innovator and a great mind, but he didn't have any business sense.
No business sense.
And he just kept getting fucked over one time after the next. And so it was unfortunate, but that happens to Poe big time. He just never sees any real money. He winds up moving to a cottage in Fordham, New York, which later was the Bronx. So I was kind of pissed. I knew it was there, but didn't think of it on this trip. But that would have been cool.
That would have been cool to get some
if
pictures.
If we could have done.
Yeah, because his house, that place is
yeah,
still
we
there.
Went to Yankee Stadium. So me and CK and Alex. So, you know, we were kind of rushed. So probably wouldn't have worked, at least not in daylight. So,
right.
And I'm not sure what the neighborhood's like there. But yeah, he's got that. It's still there. It's called the Poe House. And it's Poe House. I just thought the.
The Poe
the Poe House.
The Poe Cottage.
The Poe Cottage, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's moves into the cottage. Virginia dies there in 1847. And that's where a lot of people think Poe gets his inspiration of the
beautiful
woman
women, yes. yeah.
Dying. Is all these women dying in his life.
His foster mom.
Yeah.
His cousin, which yeah. is his wife.
Which is also his wife, and he's his own grandpa.
Yeah, I am my own grandpa.
So, yeah. So he's got all this misery, but a lot of it revolves around women in his life yeah. that died. So some people think that. October 49, he is found delirious in the streets of Baltimore. He's taken to the hospital, dies a few days later from complications of the alcoholism.
Yeah,
so.
And there was a whole list of other things they said. Rabies
did.
Was even fucking
dude,
one
I was
of them.
Dying when I read that because it does say,
like
you said
shit.
Here, it says these other things could have been a factor, including cholera, syphilis, and even rabies. And what the fuck?
Jesus Christ, who is this dude fucking, man?
I know.
God damn.
Yeah, like, who are you fucking that you're getting rabies, bro? Like, damn.
Give me that rabies job.
I mean, as if the 13-year-old cousin wasn't horrible enough. Like dude,
holy fuck.
What the fuck, man, you know? So
that's so fucked, dude.
I was laughing at that, too. I thought that was funny because that one threw me. But, yeah, I did see that as well. But he was only 40. Now, there is an interesting theory, though, about his death in the term called cooping. Have you ever heard of that before?
I didn't see that. No, what is that?
Well, what it was a practice in the 1800s where gangs of people that worked for political parties,
right,
on an election day, they would go through the streets and, like, just round people up. Like vagrants and like kids or whatever they could find that was legal to vote.
And just make them vote.
They would go in a room. So they would call it a coop. That's where the cooping comes from. And they would get them drunk, high, whatever the fuck they wanted.
Like
to
gangs
do.
In New York.
Yeah. And then they would send them to the different precincts to vote and they would have them change clothes.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. They seriously like gangs in New York.
Yeah. So that's what they think happened with Poe, because he was in clothes that were not his when they found him
shit,
in the street.
Yeah. See, I didn't see that. That's fucking crazy. I could see that happening. It's fucking the same fucking time and shit. So
yeah. And I mean, if he was fucked up, like he probably was, cause it seemed like that wasn't all
that
the
was
time
his deal. Yeah. So, yeah, that probably happened.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
an interesting theory of it. I had never heard of that before. I never heard of cooping before, but it was apparently pretty rampant in that time period in the 1800s.
That's so fucking insane, dude.
It is. It's very fucked up. But Poe's best works were considered, or most popular maybe is a better way to say that, Gothic fiction, as you mentioned.
Right.
He continued writing stories in that style because he knew it appealed to his readers.
They're like, oh, this is a Poe writing.
Yeah, that's
what I'm going to get. Yeah.
I mean, the iconic stories, I mean, I remember reading some of these in school, even The Telltale Heart, The Black Cat, The Pit and the Pendulum.
Yeah,
The Pit and the Pendulum.
I remember reading that in school for sure.
Yeah, Murders in the Rue Morgue. I mean, there's so many of them. They're great stories. The Gold Bug, there's some great ones. Poe is considered the first writer to pen detective stories.
Yes,
which was very
too.
Interesting.
Have you ever read any of his detective stories?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very good. The Purloined Letter. There's some good ones that he's written.
Nice.
But he also like resurrected science fiction, which I'm not familiar with a science fiction story of his, but I'm sure they exist. He also wrote comedy. He wrote essays. He loved to play hoaxes and jokes on people with his writing. And
send him
really
some shit that's fucking not, yeah.
So he's definitely a weird one. And like you said, you know, the first author to try to make a living at it, and also the first U.S. author to be more popular in Europe than he was in the United States.
Yeah, there was actually people that thought he was from Europe for a while. Honestly.
His writing style is very European. And, of course, we know he spent some time over there as a kid. So who knows? He's very well educated. So that may be where that comes from.
Got a lot of his inspiration also from there. And just like, I like the way these guys write. So I'm going to add that style to my style.
Yeah. I mean, he is so great. I've been listening to more of those audio stories of some of the Poe stuff this time.
Yeah.
And I found some really good ones, but the Telltale Heart was great. I was actually listening to The Pit and the Pendulum when I got in that accident Saturday when that chick rear-ended me. So
fuck you, Poe.
Yeah, I was like, damn it. I was listening to a fucking podcast story. Thanks. You know, now I got to deal with this bullshit.
Right.
That's for another day. So just an amazing fucking creator of horror fiction, man. He's just the shit. I really, really love his work. The Poe toaster is an interesting tradition that was actually done at Poe's grave in Baltimore every January 19th, which is his birthday, also my mom's birthday, a bottle of cognac and three roses left there by an anonymous person that dubbed himself the Poe Toaster. So that's kind of interesting.
Toasting the Poe's. Tyson DePoe, man. Yeah.
Right.
Cognac, so, too.
Yeah.
All right.
Some high dollar shit. Now, the last toast was done in 2009 on the bicentennial of his death. Now, a former church historian from Baltimore, Sam Porpora, claimed he started the tradition in 1949, but nobody could prove it. But that's what he's claiming. So who knows?
Who knows?
It's still cool, though. I thought that was
neat.
No,
yeah, it's cool if that happened, like, literally annually. On, yeah. Yeah, that's
always on
cool
his birthday,
shit.
They would leave it there. I think
that's
really cool.
Shit, man. Yeah. Fucking, didn't he only, like, write one novel or whatever?
He did. I actually thought he had never written a novel, but then I saw that he did.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, it's an adventure story, which is weird. The narrative of Arthur Gordon Pym. I have never read that I remember. I'm definitely going to get a copy.
Oh, I know you. You're definitely going to find it.
Yeah,
I know
it may be in my collection downstairs because I've got like three Poe collections. I'll have to look. I thought I had everything he had written.
Right.
So it may very well be in there. But the book is like heavy enough to bludgeon like a
to add to the list people. Of weapons for the killer cage match.
That would be a good idea. My Poe hardcover collection. That would be
that'd
a good
be a weapon.
It would be. It's fucking brutal. His short stories are read by students. I know I read them. I don't know. Did you read them in school?
I like I said, I remember reading Pitting the Pendulum for sure. And I remember The Raven. I wish
yeah,
I know it was
The
poem,
Raven was
but,
like
yeah.
a given.
But
that's
yeah,
cool.
I remember reading a couple of them in school.
I wonder if today they do. I searched on Google and I could not find anything that said that they did or didn't.
I'll ask my oldest, see if he's ever, because he's in high school.
Yeah, so. I would be curious if he had ever read it in school, because I would seriously doubt it. I mean,
yeah,
some
he's never mentioned it to me.
The Telltale Heart is about a dude that kills a dude, chops him up,
puts him
under the floor, and hears the heart beating through the floor when the cops show up and flips out.
Yeah.
Rips up the floor and fucking
there's the body get it out of here.
So yeah, I mean, I can't imagine them reading that in
I
school.
I bet you they don't read that in
I
school
I can't
anymore,
even imagine
man.
It maybe The Raven
yeah maybe The Raven
but
I don't know.
I can't
I don't
believe.
Even know the Pit and the Pendulum would be
no I can't imagine. It's about the death penalty. The Black Cat is a good one I read in school, and that one's fucked up,
right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, so
dude kills a black cat and then the house burns down.
That's what's going to make the future forget about things like Edgar Allan Poe. You got to teach them, man.
Right. But the black cat, dude, the dude kills the cat, buries him in the wall, and he's sleeping one night. The house burns down to the ground. He dies in the bed, and above him in a perfect outline is a black cat on the wall in the soot.
Dude.
It's fucking brutal, dude. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I can't imagine
yeah,
them
probably
reading
don't do that.
That
in school anymore.
And the fact that a dude is doing this in like the 1830s and 40s is a fucking
yeah.
trip.
Yeah.
Because those stories are wicked. I mean, I'm just the way I'm paraphrasing them, but
yeah, no, that's
pretty
fucking
brutal,
awesome,
man.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say, but just great. So that wraps up, you know, the horror homage this month. We wanted to really pay tribute.
Yeah.
Being that it's our first October podcast, then we wanted to do the, we started it with The Exorcist, The Real Exorcist, then we did Shakers,
and then
we did the H.P. Lovecraft, or no, did we
no.
do, what did we do before H.P. Lovecraft?
Oh, man, I don't know. They
yeah,
mixed
now
together,
I put myself
dude.
On, oh, the real, the fictional horror
Oh, yeah,
characters.
The Exorcist.
Well, no.
Oh, the fictional horror.
Yeah,
Freddy
and
Shakers. Yeah, yeah.
And then we did, Lovecraft, and then now we're doing Poe. So yeah, it's hard to keep all these weeks straight.
Yeah. So we were gonna do the Seek and Wonder next week,
right?
But because we changed it up because of that situation, we're going back to some murder.
Right.
Some legit.
We thought,
murder.
Okay, we did it in October. It's cool. The Watsika Wonder is on the list for December. I think.
December. We switched.
It's
it,
a
yeah.
great one. We're gonna do it, but we got together this evening and we thought
we did a whole month of kind yeah, of the same thing.
Right.
Sort
maybe we should
thing.
Just go back to old school in it and do some harsh.
Yeah.
Harsh yeah. fucking serial killing.
Oh, this
Dean
guy.
Corll, dude.
This guy.
A lot of people might not know Dean Corll.
This guy did some brutal shit like 1970 to 73 or something.
Yeah,
shit,
I mean, really fucked up abductions in the basement and torturing.
Yeah.
And fucked up.
And Candy.
Really bad. Candy
and
Man.
Candy.
Yeah. So it's a really brutal one we're going to do next week with Dean Corll. So yeah, make sure you come back, and we'll take you down to Houston in the 1970s for some sick shit. So, yes, but now it's on to Metal. It's on to Colin CK.
Yeah.
See if he's around. So on Wild Man Street.
This.
All right. Got you here doing some metal, man. We're listening to some fucking metal church, jamming the fuck out. Poe-inspired songs on this episode as best we could. I couldn't find any Lizzie Borden, though. But Lizzie Borden, Poe-inspired. Yeah. But lots of Lizzie Borden. I got one for you.
Yeah, I don't think any of this stuff is Poe-inspired.
No, I didn't see any, but it's good to have you on, dude.
Yes, it's great to have you on, man.
Yeah, we love hearing you on Skype and doing these interviews, even though we're having some little glitches here with the new setup. So we appreciate you hanging in there, bud.
Yeah, appreciate it.
No problem. Growing pains, it's all good.
Exactly.
Fuck yeah.
Exactly. Now, I know because we're doing this Halloween or horror theme month, we talked about it'd be cool as hell to do Lizzie Borden. So I know you are wanting to dish that one out because this is the last episode of October. So
yeah.
Oh yeah. Lizzie Borden, obviously named after the murderer who was accused and acquitted of murder in the 19th century. Everybody knows who I believe everybody knows who Lizzie Borden is.
Yeah.
Most people do.
I think she was like the OJ of that time. Like,
yeah, exactly.
How the fuck she got away with that is fucking ridiculous. Dude. You're the only person alive in the house. Everybody's dead.
With an axe.
And you're fucking walking from that. Like, what the fuck?
That's fucking awesome, dude.
Yeah, did she have like Kato Kaelin in like the tool shed or something?
The glove didn't fit, so they had to acquit.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Hell yeah.
The bloody glove, yeah.
The bloody axe.
Yeah, she was a crazy bitch, so she inspired this band, I'm sure.
She inspired it, and also Lizzie Borden is also, they owe a big homage to Alice Cooper, because they kind of styled the band the same way Alice Cooper did. Alice Cooper obviously was taken from, I believe, a 16th century name of a witch. It was also the name of the band and also the persona that the lead singer, Alice Cooper, took on. His real name was Vincent Furnier. The funny thing is I cannot find Lizzie Borden's real name.
Really?
Really? That's fucked up.
Yeah. All I know, I know for a fact that his brother, Joey Scott Hargis, is the drummer, and they formed the band together, but I can't, I've researched it, and I cannot find what his real name is. Obviously,
that's fucking nuts.
The last name has to be Hargis, but don't know what his first name is or anything, so he's kept it quiet and under wraps, so.
Huh.
Did you think somebody would have mentioned it by now?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought, and I looked all over. I could not find it. So if anybody could, let me know if they know it, that'd be cool. But I couldn't find it anywhere.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's weird. You would think, it would be somewhere because not too much stays secret on the internet. That's for sure.
Exactly, and Lizzie Borden, they got their start in 1983 in Los Angeles.
Right.
They were a theatrical band, to say. Sometimes they get the bad rap of being hair metal, which is far from
not
being hair metal.
Yeah,
their sound is traditional new wave of British heavy metal, a little bit inspired, a little bit of thrash, a little bit of speed metal influenced. But overall, it's like a traditional sound.
Right, that's cool.
Here's a surprise. It was put on one of the Metal Massacre albums, Metal Massacre 4.
Oh, no shit.
So, you know where that leads to. Fucking Metal Blade.
Metal Blade. I was just going to say Metal Blade.
Right.
Metal Blade's got to throw some love here. We mentioned that like almost every freaking episode.
Yeah, right. We could totally do a fucking Metal Blade episode. If they would answer my emails, Metal Blade Records, for God's sakes, I want to promote your bands and your label. Please contact us, man. Dude.
I know, right?
I'm like, guys, come on. I'm trying to help the cause. I love, we all love Metal Blade, man. It's the shit.
Anybody out there that loves metal knows bands and loves bands on fucking Metal Blade, man.
Yeah, I mean, they're just like a common, there's, it's always there, you know? It's great.
Yeah, exactly. And it got, you know, Brian Schlegel liked them and he signed them to a album deal. They first came out with an EP in the same in 83, Give Him the Axe. It was four songs. One of the songs was a cover of Long Live Rock and Roll, Killer Version by Rainbow.
Nice. Hell yeah.
They quickly followed that up with Love You to Pieces. Their first full length album. And it's like I said, originally they were more or less influenced by maybe new wave British heavy metal,
right?
A little bit of speed metal, a little bit of thrash. Again, you know, just a regular heavy metal band. None of this hair metal shit. Even though for theatrics, you know, he dressed the part, but that was part of the show.
That happens.
You know, they put on some sick shit. You know, chopping people's. Both dolls' heads off, you know, killing people on stage.
That's all good fun.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
I was actually lucky enough to see them on their Master of Disguise tour, and they were fucking phenomenal. They put on such a great show, and they sounded great.
That's cool. I'd never seen them live before. I didn't really know much. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I don't know much about them, so I was really anxious to hear what you had to say. And I listened to a few of the songs. It's not totally.
Same here. I don't mind.
You know, it's not something I would put on because I don't, you know, listen. I'm kind of closed-minded. I wish I was more open-minded like you.
Yeah, we've had this discussion before.
Yes, we have. But yeah, I was digging what I played. It's cool. I think the people dig it if they check them out.
You know, it's kind of like Merciful Fate. They're not for everyone. He's got a great voice, and it's a little bit different. They had their second album, which was Ultraviolence. Oh, I'm sorry, Menace to Society, right. In 86.
Nice.
You know, and he started to get a little bit bigger, and that album was even a little bit heavier than the previous one, a little bit faster. And he also had really good musicians with him. His brother's a great drummer, Joey Scott. Joe Holmes, who actually played with Ozzy after Lizzie Borden for a little bit of time. He was the guitarist.
Well, that's cool, man. I never knew that.
Around that time.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah, dude, you can hear the Danbury train in the background. It's
funny.
Yeah,
you can.
It's,
really?
Yeah, no, you dude, totally, I totally can. Yeah, because yeah. Yeah, he looked at me like, train, right? I was like, yeah, no, there's no train in Hayworth, so there used to be.
Awesome.
There used to be, but no, you could hear it in the background. It's great.
That's awesome.
So your son of Sam, basically.
Yeah.
So.
It's on train station, as you know, is like right down the road.
Yeah, you're right there at the train station. Yes.
So, in 87, they came out with an album called Visualize. It was a little bit more commercial, but it was still a good album. A good metal album. And 2 years after that, he came out with his best album, Master of Disguise, which was a concept album, you know, about the, basically about becoming famous and you're hiding behind disguises all the time. And you don't really see your true self.
Huh.
So, and what was cool is it came out around the same time as, I think a year after Operation Mindcrime. So at that time, the only two albums I was playing at that point was Operation Mindcrime and Master of Disguise by Lizzie Borden.
Okay.
Nice.
And at that point, he kind of disbanded the Lizzie Borden band, and that was more or less his solo album. The only remaining member was his brother, obviously, you know, that probably caused hard feelings, so he kicked his brother out of the band.
I can imagine. Yeah. My brother would be pretty pissed off if I was in a band with him, and I just looked at him and said, fuck off, dude.
That's funny. And then he got disillusioned with the music business at that time. That was 89. He kind of stepped aside, went on a hiatus, and actually didn't release anything until 11 years later in 2000 with Deal with the Devil, which was, goddamn, it was his heaviest album to date. You know, he came back with a vengeance at that time.
Nice.
And still signed to Metal Blade, you know, and again, they went on another hiatus. And in 2007, they released Appointment with Death, another great album, still on Metal Blade. And just recently this year, in 2018, they released their follow-up to Appointment with Death, My Midnight Things, which is phenomenal.
So they did actually just put a new one out. That's fucking awesome,
yeah, that's
man.
Amazing, man. They've been at it for fucking ever, man. Jesus.
35 years and still on the same label.
Yeah, that's fucking great.
That's impressive, man. Yeah, they're one of the original Metal Blade bands, that's for sure.
You know, so they'll give it to Brian. Give it up for Brian Schlegel for, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Supporting a band and sticking with it and, you know, re-signing them and giving them
love.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. I'd love to talk to Brian. It'd be an honor. I loved his book, For the Sake of the Heaviness, man. It was the shit.
Yeah, that really was a good, great book.
Great one. So very cool. Well, anything to add on Lizzie Borden before we move on, dude?
You know, if you want to check them out, I think it's still available. There's a DVD called The Murderous Metal Roadshow from 86.
All right, that's cool.
It's a live DVD, and it's got pretty much their stage show. It's a great video, you know. And like I said, they put on a great show. You know, they got a bad rap at some point for being hair metal, and again, they're not a hair metal band. You know, they have talent. They're a metal band. They're not fucking glam.
You know, it's Winger, you know, all over again.
Yeah.
You know, so go check them out.
That's cool, man. Well, I hope we do turn some people onto it. We've been turning a lot of listeners onto shit. I know myself. I mentioned it last week with Revocation, man. Just totally loving that shit.
That shit was fucking still just, jamming. Like I said earlier, Big Mike loving that shit.
Yeah, Big Mike loving it. So, yeah, I mean, it's just great stuff. It's just cool to turn metalheads onto stuff, and we hope that that's what we're doing. So, now, Chris Schaubeck, you were at a little show this past weekend, weren't you?
Yeah, I was able to make it to Trick or Troll, and it was nice. Freaking amazing. Me and Cashman went up there to Moline, and I just got to say, it's pretty crazy when you get there and you park your car, and the first thing you see is a bottle of booze just sitting there waiting for you. Already.
Oh,
not
wow.
Like somebody's, it's like somebody set it outside of the door of their car and forgot it. Because there was nobody around. It's just sitting there. And we looked at it for a minute, and then we're like, all right, never mind. And then we came back, and it was still there. So I was like, fuck it, we're taking that.
That's for you, bro.
Yeah, it was like, whatever, dude, doesn't freaking matter. But, yeah, it was awesome, man. We got there, people hanging up. Lots of people showed up. Obviously, fucking Crotch Ripper fucking killed it.
Oh, I'm sure.
Jesse being Jesse.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this. I haven't heard anything about Jesse on this trip.
Jesse being Jesse, he didn't butt chug nothing this time.
Oh, he didn't? Nah. Oh, wow. Was he naked, though?
His lady was with him, and he promised he wouldn't put anything in his butt.
Oh, wow. That's nice of him. You know.
But when he was jamming, yes, he was naked.
Totally naked.
It was great,
yeah.
Dude. Fucking, because he does when he does his, because you know he's one man, so he's got his like tablet or whatever sitting on the floor, and right. He's just crouching and it's just hanging there, dude. He's like, I was just like, hey, girl, nice dick.
He's
Cashman.
Fucked up.
Cashman got up there and did guest box on a song with him.
Oh, nice.
And so did Texas Dave from Sinworm.
Nice.
It's so awesome. Who else played, man? Frickin' goddamn trash dick played, man. Like, Necro Cannibal Ass Grinder.
Oh, fucking A.
Bill Nye, Chris Stern.
Yeah, yeah, how did he do?
Dude, he did fucking amazing. Tore it fucking up. Murder Complex played.
Yep.
It was awesome. So it was a great time.
That's awesome.
They plan on doing it again next year, and it's at an amazing spot called Beer Stube in Moline with fucking great food. Fucking,
oh, wow.
They allow that shit to happen.
I'm really bummed I missed it. I know I had been planning on it, and I had something come up I couldn't get out of, so I'm sorry I missed it because I really wanted to go to check that out with that lineup.
Yeah, it was great.
So.
And again, I was telling you earlier, I talked to Jason, my buddy Jason Murder. Check him out. Find him on Facebook. Trying to just look up Murder Machine Clothing because he had all kinds of shirts, patches, and all kinds
of
shit.
Yeah, the shirt you've got on is fucking badass.
I fucking love this shirt, dude.
That's
I looked
really
at that
cool.
one, I was like, yeah.
Yeah,
dude.
I definitely, we need to hook up with that dude. So
yeah, it's fucking awesome. So check out Murder Machine Clothing because he was there, got rid of some merch too. So
yeah, we're going to do some patches, huh?
Yeah.
Some Murder Metal Mayhem patches coming out here. So that's really cool. Talking about doing some buttons too. So trying to branch out so you guys can go to MurderMetalMayhem.com and go pick up some merch. Listen to the other shows too while you're at it. So anything else about Trick or Troll, man? Just a good event.
We got done with all the bands got done and everything. Cashman killed it, of course.
Oh, I'm sure.
Freaking Sinworm was fucking awesome, dude. I don't know.
Was there a good turnout?
Yeah, that was a pretty decent turnout, dude.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cool.
It was pretty decent. Those people there dancing, having a good time. I don't know if I've ever told you about Sinworm, but Texas Dave, dude.
I know about you guys were telling me about Texas
Dave. His
Dave.
Pick hand is so fucking fast.
Yeah.
I just don't. It's a blur.
Wow.
It's awesome, man.
That's
but,
cool, man.
But yeah, Texas or Trick or Troll was fucking amazing. Thank you, Alex.
Yeah, Alex, that's such a cool event, and we'll be plugging that, I'm sure, next year for you once again. So that's fucking awesome. I heard, we knew there were shows all over the place, so hopefully all the shows went well. I saw the Vile Cynic guy said their show went good up in
Michael,
Chicago.
Michael, my brother, he went to the one.
Oh, yeah, how did
shit.
That
He one? Said that was fucking amazing.
Sweet,
so.
Sweet. So all of them, the three, sounded like they were good events. So, yeah, Halloween's always a good time to do shit like that. So, but that's awesome, man. I also wanted to mention, I just saw this today on Facebook. Today, October 30th, is the 35th anniversary of Merciful Fate's Melissa album.
Yeah.
And CK, I know that that's near and dear to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is one of my favorite albums. And, of course, it helped kick the shit out of cancer for me.
That's right. It scared the cancer away.
Yeah.
Man, that album is so fucking dark and evil, man. The first song is evil, and Satan's Fall is the last one, and it's so friggin' badass, you know?
Hell yeah.
It's a killer album. To me, it's just a classic.
Yeah, I mean, I love Don't Break the Oath, but I gotta say, just song for song, I like Melissa just a little bit better.
Only because, I mean, one reason for me is it doesn't, and to this day, there's really nothing that sounds like that album or sounds like Merciful Fate at that time.
No. And they were rushed doing that. They only did it in a few days. I mean, it's amazing that they pulled that
Jesus
off like
Christ.
That, you know, just ridiculous. So really great to hear that. Now, another great thing, CK, I saw, and I know you're a little miffed about this, so you'll have to, you know, go over the fucking top. But Queensryche is touring with fucking Fate's Warning, which is like, I lost my fucking shit because I've always wanted to see them together.
Too.
I know. And I want to see Queensryche with Todd Latour, so I'm like, fuck yeah. And Fate's Warning? Yeah. I look at the dates. Okay, there's a Chicago date, but then Fate's Warning comes back and says they're not playing like the 4th and the 17th or something like that.
And it's one of your dates?
And CK, what happened, dude?
The 4th is they're playing in Uncasville, Connecticut, and fucking Fate's Warning is not playing with them.
I know.
Oh, my God,
But to Fate's Warning's defense, whatever, so I think Mike Abdo posted or somebody posted, hey, it's not the band. Like, it has to do with the tour promoter and how it's
right.
How I don't know what, because that sucks. The one Connecticut date, Fate's right, Warning right. doesn't do it because
know,
they're
right?
a Connecticut
gonna
band.
Gonna have to come to Illinois, man.
They you are.
Know, so I might have to go to Mass or try to go to Mass or try to go to New York to see him.
Yeah, right. Or meet, you know? Or you can meet me and Joey in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
I'll just
we'll
slide.
Be.
Yeah, that'd be fucking awesome,
dude. Wouldn't it? Wouldn't
that
it?
Be fucking, yeah. That'd be fucking awesome.
I don't know what the venue's like. It says Concord. I don't know what that
I've
is.
I've never been there.
So I'm curious. It's got to be decent size, but I'm going to check it out. I looked on Ticketmaster, and tickets were not available yet. So
right. All right.
But they had them up through March dates, but nothing past that.
Yeah, and that's to promote the new Queensryche album, which comes out next March.
Yeah, The Verdict. I can't wait. Yeah, March 1st, it said it comes out March 1st. So,
which I already pre-ordered.
No.
Did you really?
No, I can't believe it.
Can't imagine.
That's so funny.
I went through, I think they're doing the Pledge Music thing first.
Oh, okay.
And I actually pre-ordered on that. I'm such
funny.
A dick.
That's funny. That's well, hilarious. I pre-ordered the DVD of Bloodlines, the Vincent Castiglia movie.
Oh, yeah.
That comes out November. John Borowski did that. But I advanced ordered it because I really want to see it.
That looks killer.
It looks really good. So that's going to be cool. March 14th in Chicago is that Queensryche and Fate's Warning show. So, any other metal news, dude? Local stuff?
I don't have anything right now, man.
Okay, that's
between
all right.
Everything I did all weekend and
right
work and
yeah,
kids,
I'm impressed you're here and
I
you're
had
lively.
Enough,
and
I
you're...
had enough time to do some study on Edgar. So,
right. Yeah, well, we're getting ready, CK, to build the new Murder Metal Mayhem studio. Starts on Saturday with our designer. / builder, Mr. Chris Shaw back here.
Yeah, I'm gonna start build. I'm gonna get pretty much well done on Saturday. Yeah. So
did you ever think, like, what's going on? This is going like 7-8 months now. You ever think it would get to the point where you're building your own studio for the podcast?
No.
But we never. Were out in the garage one day, and Chris is like, dude, you know, maybe we should do something out here. I can't remember how that came up, but
no, I think you were talking about getting rid of all this stuff, and you're like, dude,
well, I
we
wanted to
totally
get rid of the stuff.
This.
Yeah, that's true. I got that dumpster, got rid of a lot of junk, and cleared the garage out, and
now it's empty. We got space,
totally empty. We got two refrigerators. We got all kinds of shit. But anyway, we're building a wall. We've been kind of secretive about this. But all the supplies were delivered today from RP Lumber, so thanks, yeah. guys, for that delivery. And anyway,
I'll be out here Saturday morning.
Yeah, Saturday morning we build the wall to seal it off from the rest.
Putting a door in, obviously.
A door, yep. with enough space in there where we can do our thing. And then the rest of the garage space is going to be where we do bands. If we want to do a band, we'll have room for the band to literally play in there if they want to.
Set up and do some recording for the
podcast. And we could record shit, and we could move the podcast recording to that part of the garage where we can do live recordings of the bands and talk almost like Carson style. On like a couple of couches or something.
Hey,
that's awesome.
It's going to be badass. And then we're going to have the Murder Metal Mayhem logo, the Gaither one, is going to be on the wall facing the outside so that if we do the band thing on the couches, you'll be able to see it above our heads and it'll look really cool.
Yeah.
And then we've hired somebody to come in and paint. Really cool. We're going to keep that secret until it's done, but it's fucking
pictures of it
wicked.
Yeah.
Inside and out. So two different things. In the studio will be one paint job, and the outside wall that faces the other part of the garage will be different with the logo. It's going to be sick. So we're really excited about the construction. And so when you come to visit CK, you're going to get to see our new digs when we get in there. So
that's awesome. That's going to be sweet.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. We're really excited. I mean, the 50th episode, I think I figured it'll be about April, March into April, somewhere in there. So I'm thinking we might have to do like a little cookout slash
throwdown, get some people together,
get a little party going on and have a cool 50th episode. Oh, yeah. So anyway, CK, always good to talk to you.
Always good to be on.
Yeah, it's definitely good to talk to you again.
You keep kicking ass, dude. And we will talk to you soon, my friend.
And I believe I will be able to do a live one next week, too.
Nice.
Awesome.
And I'll get with you because we changed the lineup a little bit. I don't think it'll affect what you're doing, but the features, we juggled them a bit. I'll get with you on that, though.
That's cool.
All right, brother. Take it easy, man.
Later, bro. Talk to you guys later. All right.
Red Rum. I couldn't find a post song from Lizzie Borden, but I thought Red Rum was cool.
So. Close, yeah. But yeah, Lizzie Borden, dude.
Yeah.
CK's giving us a little knowledge.
Exactly. Loves to bestow his knowledge on the rest of us. So I've never met a guy that knows more about metal than CK.
Dude, he just pre-ordered yeah. Fucking.
We're talking about shit that's not even out yet. Yeah. Pre-ordered it. Yep. I already got that. Yep. So it's pretty funny with him. Now I know we were talking about, a lot of people were asking, you know, man, how's that new Halloween movie, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. I went with a friend and we were just like digging the shit out of it. What I liked about it, you know, and it's really good. It's as if the ones that, you know, that they did off of the original two, you know,
right, yeah
was like off, it was like
they shouldn't be there,
right?
Like,
so this is as if those
Jason
didn't
in
exist.
Manhattan and shit like that,
right?
Yeah,
so this was as if those didn't exist, so
it just kept with a storyline basically.
Yes, and it was fucking amazing. They had Jamie Lee Curtis, of course, is in it, and she plays the same character,
right?
And the Michael Myers dude is bad as fuck. There's some brutal, I mean, brutal fucking killing scenes, man. It's sick.
I need to go see it, man. Like, yeah. I said, my sister went and saw it with her boyfriend yesterday, actually.
Nice.
And she said it was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So.
It's really good. I thought it was really well done and kept me kind of on the edge. It's just really, really good. So I think it's well worth going to see if you like horror movies, and certainly... You know, Michael Myers' character is just really one of those iconic 80s into the 90s horror, you know.
For sure, yeah.
Good shit. So definitely 70s. Check it out. Yeah, for sure. Now, we were talking here about some mayhem, and I know this is one of our favorite parts. A lot of our listeners really dig it. I had an idea or a memory of one that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Kind of hairy, but funny at the same time.
But it's like a low 12 road trip story.
Yeah.
So I bet I bet there's some chaos. Oh, is it Meister low 12 or?
No.
All right.
No.
It's Tim
it's
era?
Not, it's Tim.
All right.
So,
no offense, Meister.
Oh, no. This is an old school low 12 story. The Great Kentucky Road Trip, we called it on the Brutality Report. But anyway, it was March of 2000. We went on our very first road trip with Low 12.
Right.
And we went to Kentucky, Lexington, Kentucky. We had some bands down there we had been communicating with Heavy Core. And they had a really cool spot they wanted us to play. And
like, all right, let's go fucking
play,
man. We're
like, fuck it, let's do it, you know. So Les is, you know, was always this like master fucking mechanic.
Always,
fucking build,
dude, yes.
Shit. I mean, this motherfucker is like a genius when it comes to that shit. He made a trailer from like a 38 Ford axle, some crazy shit.
Dude, that trailer. I remember that trailer.
That
dude.
Was a fucking fortress. I mean, that motherfucker could have withstood like Chernobyl and shit, you know? So he built this trailer, okay? But the problem was, is he finished it like the week of the show. So we hadn't really any chance to like try this out, Okay. Tim was very concerned. Okay. Because he's like, dude, Les is really good with this shit, but it would have been nice to like and playing like Peoria or something.
Yeah. Something a little closer.
Yeah, not
as opposed
6 hours
to
away.
Kentucky, dude.
So, yeah. So anyway, Les is all excited. We load up and it was me, Les, and Wes, who had just joined the band like 2 months ago.
Right.
So he was like, you know, virgin fucking meat.
He's like,
know?
This is the first time I'm ever doing this shit.
Yeah. He's in the van with us. And then in the car was Tim and his girlfriend, Lisa.
Right.
They were following us. Anyway, we get out on the highway, dude. We didn't get to Leroy. That fucking trailer was like swaying
all over the road.
It was fucking insane. We pulled over and Wes had his hands like embedded in the fucking dashboard. He goes, before Les pulled over, he said, for the love of God, pull this fucking van over. He said it like 50 times, for the love of God. I was laughing so fucking hard in the back seat. So Les finally pulls over and lets him out. And he's like, fuck this, I'm going with Tim. So he got in Tim's car or Lisa's car with Tim and Lisa. So they're following us. And so I think there had to have been there were cell phones. Yeah,
cell phones.
I was just trying to think if I remember. Definitely not texting, but I think they were calling us and they were like, the fucking trailer is all over the place. You guys are fucking nuts. And Les is telling like fucking army stories to me. And he's like me, man. The motherfucker could talk forever.
Right, right.
So me and Les in a fucking van.
Just fishtailing down the road.
Just didn't give a fuck. And this trailer was all the fuck over the place. And Wes is fucking going, for the love of God, pull that fucking thing over. He goes, we'll just put all the equipment, since it's just you and Les, let's just put all the gear in the van. And just fucking
leave this trailer
like chained up somewhere, like where we could put it and come back and get it, which was not a bad idea.
Right.
But Les is like, no, we're taking the trailer. So we kept going. And then we hit these fucking like bumpy roads in Kentucky.
Oh, right.
That are like spaced like every 10 feet. And that fucking trailer was squirrely as a motherfucker. And we're in like four lanes,
sure,
fucking
it's hopping
shit
all over the place.
And we
dude.
Have people passing us, looking at us like, what the fuck?
You got your equipment in that thing too,
dude,
man. Fuck.
Tim is behind us and they're just like, Tim told Lisa, get the fuck away from him because he was afraid it was going to break loose. Legit.
Oh my God, dude.
So anyway, the fucking guys in this band hook us up with this hotel and it's like 45 minutes past Lexington. So as if it wasn't bad enough.
You still, after the show, got to drive with that fucking
trip.
No,
we did it first because we had to check in before a certain time. So we get to the hotel. It's fucking closed. Like, it doesn't exist anymore.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, we're like, what the fuck?
Dude, what?
So then we drove to the venue. We're so fucking exhausted and just completely spent from this trailer fiasco. We get to the venue. There's three. It's exterior stairs, like wood. Like homeboy made it with a sawhorse, which, I mean, you're good with that stuff, okay? But this looked like I did it, okay? Three fucking flights, okay?
Oh, my God, dude.
The bottom floor was like a fucking, like a disco, like rave kind of dance party shit going on.
Yeah.
The second floor was the rock, the metal
club, where you were going, yeah.
And the third floor was where bands practiced. They had like rehearsal space. Right. So this was quite the fucking Empire Rock Club, I think is what it was called.
That's fucking cool.
It was
shit,
badass,
man.
So
when you
get
too many people in groups like that, there's probably going to be a fight somewhere.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy because when we get paid, you had to go down to the dance club and there's like 13-year-olds like grinding up on each other and you're like, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I got to go.
I'm going to get in trouble just being in this motherfucker. Let me get out. But you had to go down there to get paid. It was kind of funny. Anyway, So it was a crazy night. We loaded in. We fucking tore it the fuck up. We actually recorded, I think, that show. And those there's two or three live songs on the Flesh of the Week, the Low 12 Flesh of the Week, that were from that night at that show. That was badass. Right?
Hell yeah.
And we had a good time. There was titties aplenty. we had some chicks licking up on each other, and we had, yeah, a lot of boobies, pictures from Crazy Mike, just good time.
Just good fucking time.
Yeah, really good time. So, yeah, so then on the way back.
Did you bring the trailer back, too?
We did bring the trailer back. Continuing, but Les was, like, taking it easy because it was a Sunday. Just taking it slower and just
right.
It was
not
still,
in so much of a hurry and
it
shit.
Was all over the place. Oh, the other thing that fucked us up on the trip, we forgot that the time changed. They
oh,
were
oh
Eastern
yeah when you
time.
Go, oh.
So now we lost an hour. Oh, it was
yeah,
like I said, one
yeah. So that,
fucking
yeah.
thing after
it's
the
like,
other.
We gotta get there, man. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, we stopped at like a McDonald's and we looked at the clock. We're like, fuck, that's where the time changed. God damn it. You
yeah,
know, now we're
that,
really late. You
yeah,
know?
That shit sucks.
It was crazy. But, and you know me with time.
Oh,
changes
yeah. I know how it is.
Time zones. I'm a fucking mess. But on the way back, though, he stopped at a truck stop. And they had availability. Like, there was a dude, like a mechanic, like, available,
right?
Like, right
hell,
then.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was cool. He jumped under there. He said we were, like, a quarter inch from that thing completely giving way and like launching down the fucking highway.
Get the fuck out of here.
He said maybe 5 miles. This motherfucker was like a missile. Could you imagine all the gear? Oh my God. It would have been horrible.
Oh my God.
So thank God we stopped.
Yeah, definitely.
Less
definitely.
Again, but in a way less creative. Cause what it was he didn't have an anti-sway bar on it. That
so,
we learned. Anti-sway
I was gonna
bar
ask,
put
boy,
an end
is that
to
what
that
it was yeah.
Yeah, we learned, and it was a hell of a lesson on a trip like that, but thankfully the dudes hooked us up. We're able to weld something on it to get us back, and
fucking hey, dude,
we
that's
learned
awesome,
yeah
man.
it was a good
oh
time.
My God,
it was a good time, that's for sure. Now killer cage match. We know a lot of people dig it. We love it too. Thanks to Anastasia Kopsalis. I hope I pronounced that right.
It's Greek, man. I don't know how to pronounce
it. It is Greek. It's all Greek to me. And Sue Rovins, again, man, Sue is all over the place, for providing the random numbers that we do. If you're a new listener, we do this killer cage match. We have 50 killers that we come up with, and then 50 objects. The listeners pick two numbers apiece.
They got to get in the cage and fight it.
That's right. So two killers, two objects in a cage fighting till fucking death. We're looking at them as if they were in their prime when they were killing. So
I'm still baffled on this one. You ladies picked some numbers and I'm like,
I know.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I know, because we added some, because when we did the night shop, we added some. And so we've got 50 of them now. But the numbers they picked, Jim Jones, which is the cult leader, the dude that 900 people drank the Flavor Aid and fucking died.
Oh, man. He was kind of weak.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the ones we did last week, which is, you know, not like an imposing, like, physical type of a killer. Like, more of a mind fuck and,
yes, definitely.
You know, making people commit suicide. 900 and something people, that's fucked up. So he was very powerful in that regard, but physically, though, I'm not seeing him like in a fight till death type
no,
situation.
Not at all. He hid behind his congregation, basically.
Yeah. And then the other one.
The other one, we got Pete's neighbor over here.
David Berkowitz, the son
of
Sam.
This guy, he said this dog told him to go kill people. So
yeah, I mean, he's a little pudgy Jewish dude. From the Queens or somewhere in the city.
Yeah, no.
You know, he's a fool. You know, he's one of those serial killers that I don't really, like, look at him that way because he was just kind of an ass and he was kind of cowardly.
And goofy.
With the gun,
shit.
Too. Yeah. Like, I don't know. He's just like a weird fucking dude. And, of course, he's one of those holy rollers when he went to the joint, you know.
Yeah. I'm not. A lot of them do that.
They do. But so we got Jim Jones and David Berkowitz in the cage. Now, the two objects, ladies.
Dude.
Wow. You guys picked some really nasty ones this time. Because the first one, dude, which is what?
Bloodstained stinky thong. You got this bloodstained stinky ass thong. You got to use to kill somebody.
Right.
And so, I don't know, man.
I don't know what you're going to do with a bloodstained stinky thong. That's pretty nasty. But the other one, you might do some damage with the brass butt plug, but it's important
covered
to note,
in fecal matter.
Covered in feces. So that's an added interesting tidbit there. So what do you guys think? Jim Jones, David Berkowitz with a bloodstained stinky thong and a brass butt plug covered in feces. So what do you think, Chris?
Man, all right. It depends on who gets what. So we're just going to, we just throw the thong and the plug in the middle of the cage. And then,
I don't know, man. I think Berkowitz, they're both kind of wimpy dudes, but I think Berkowitz just seems to be like a physically bigger
more
dude.
Physically bigger.
Not so much. I didn't look at like height and weight of the two of them, but
he should, I think Berkowitz would get it just because I take that back. I think Jim Jones' are going to get it.
Oh, the people.
Jim Jones' people, because they're going to break into that cage because he had enough, you, everybody.
Well,
Jim
if that Jones's were the case, then Berkowitz is fucked. Then.
Yeah, Berkowitz is fucked.
But if they don't get in there, though, I'm thinking Berkowitz is going to grab the butt plug and just beat him to
just
fucking
beat
death.
Beat the shit out of us. Okay, that.
But again, I'm finding it hard to believe because he's kind of wimpy. But I mean, if it's a fight till death, I guess
you're in
you
the
do
cage and
you got to
do what you got
to
do.
You got to do the butt plug to the head.
Jim Jones ain't got no flavor aid.
No. And the other option would be choking him out with the fucking nasty panties, man.
And honestly, I feel like
is that what he's more likely to do, you think?
I think more likely Berkowitz to choke out Jones with the fucking panties. He's like, fuck it, dude.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's possible he like stuns him with the butt plug and then
chokes
him out with the panties.
Throw it at his head, he's down, grab him.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, this one's kind of a funny one. So ladies, your minds are in the gutter.
Thanks
it's not us.
Numbers.
We're just putting it out there. You guys are picking the numbers, so you guys are nasty this week. So that was a good one. Well, we'll keep doing these. It seems like people dig it. So
hell yeah.
Fuck yeah. Let's move on and jam out some more tunes. Annihilator, man.
Getting down,
fuck
bro.
Fuck yeah, man. That's some good old school fucking thrash metal, man.
Yeah, Ligia.
Yeah.
Ligia.
Yeah, it's Ligia. A Poe inspired or named after a Poe. I think it's a poem. So, yeah, that's fucking killer stuff from Canada. So I dig those guys. I'm going to start checking out some of the newer stuff because you were looking it up, man.
Yeah,
they're
they
still
just put
at
out
it,
an
man.
Album, man.
Yeah, it's fucking badass. Love hearing those bands from back in the day continuing just to keep putting the shit out. Yeah, the bumper music this episode, inspired by Edgar Allan Poe, Iron Maiden, Murders in the Rue Morgue, Metal Church of Unsound Mind, Annihilator, Ligeia, however you pronounce that. And the Lizzie Borden track was not. That was Red Rum, but that was still cool.
Yeah, still
just
Lizzie
jamming
Borden.
It. Thanks to all the listeners out there. Numbers continue to grow. We definitely appreciate it.
Yes,
a lot of new 100%
people, man. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, you know, people turning people on, the night shop, you know, we're slowly starting to see this thing like swell, like big time, man.
Coming up.
Yeah, it's very,
like
very
said,
cool.
The night or Tales of Terror coming up, or no, we just did Tales. I apologize.
Tales of Terror was really great for promoting us because we reached a lot of people that wouldn't normally know
and
what we were about.
The Dark History Con coming up, though,
yeah,
is going to be
the Dark History
awesome,
Convention
man.
Is going to be badass. I'm going to get into that here right after we do some of these listener comments. You want to read the first one, dude, that we
got? Yes. I'm so glad I got to see you guys at Night Shop. You guys had the whole place laughing. Now I'm hooked on the podcast.
Nice.
Wow, that's honestly the first time I've read that. Thank you, man.
Yeah, Justina, that's
dude.
Awesome.
Appreciate that.
Yeah,
that's
we
awesome.
Appreciate that. That's really
I'm
cool.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I had a good time. I ain't going to lie. It's the first time I ever done anything like that.
Yeah.
I was like, a little nervous at first.
Oh, I'm
like,
sure.
Yeah.
No,
it,
no.
It was
you did
awesome,
great.
Dude. Thank you, Justina. Awesome.
Yeah. Anna Lipscomb commented, Murder Metal Mayhem was the best thing at the Night Shop last week. You guys did a great job.
Again,
thank you,
thank
Anna.
You.
That was really nice. There was everybody there I thought was kick-ass. Troy Taylor was awesome.
Everybody was awesome.
All of the people there, the podcasters.
Nerd Geekery. Yeah, those guys were great, dude.
Yeah, and Sue reading some stuff that was pretty gruesome shit.
Yes,
it was a
it
cool
was.
Open.
Yes, it was.
And the other author that was there, just really, really cool.
It was a good night.
It was great. And that artist that was back there at our table.
That dude
was wicked,
man. He had some badass art. So
it was a great event. So thanks, Anna, for that.
Yeah, and then Ron Funk says, hey, Pete, I love the books I got from you at Market Street on Main and Hayworth. The short stories in there are really great. I'm going to start the novel next week. Good stuff.
Fuck yeah. Thank you, Ron. I appreciate that. That's nice of you.
Yes. Pete's writing is amazing. So.
Well, thanks, man. I'm getting a lot of people digging it. You can go to myname.com, PeteAltieri.com, and pick up copies of those there. So thank you, Ron. That's nice. Tim Wilson commented, please do more live performances. I missed last week, and I heard from several of my friends. You guys killed it. Fuck yeah, man. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you,
Tim.
Dude, that's great, dude.
And that's funny that Tim asked about that, about another live event, because we have an announcement to make, don't we?
Yes, November.
Yeah, we've been talking about the Dark History and Horror Convention coming up next month in Urbana, Illinois.
Actually,
November.
It's
the day after Cannibal Corpse. It's November 16th, 17th, and 18th. In Urbana, you can go on Facebook and search for Dark History Convention, BAM, it so you can keep up with the updates. Brian, just such a good dude. He's all about it. He's the one setting it up, and he's got so many really cool people.
It's going to be awesome. The guys from TCAT are going to be there, True Crime All the Time.
That's the one in July.
That's the one in July. You are correct, sir.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Jeff Gaither, John Borowski, lots of different actors and artists. And, man, it's a
three-day event, and it's going to be great.
We're going to be doing something really special on the Saturday, which would be
The 17th,
November 17th. At the Dark History and Horror Convention, Murder Metal Mayhem is going to be live doing a podcast on stage from 7 to 8 o'clock p.m.
Opening up for who?
You guys got to get there, and we're going to be opening up for First Jason.
And if you don't know who First Jason is, he's literally the first Jason.
Yeah, he played Jason Voorhees in the first Friday the 13th, and he's all about that, because his band is called First Jason. He's got lots of merch, and he's a good dude. And so we're going to open up for him, so that'll be fun. And that'll be awesome. It'll be our first live podcast, so that's going to be great. You can come be a part of it and hang out and listen to it as it goes down.
Come check it out.
Be really kick-ass. And you can get tickets and stuff for it, and you can get single day, the whole 3 days, whatever you want. So check that out. Also, the YouTube channel, we mentioned
Pete
the video.
Pete has got that set up. The video's up, like you mentioned earlier, yeah.
Yeah, you can go on YouTube, and Murder Metal Mayhem has our own channel, and we posted the video from the Night Shop, so you can watch the whole thing.
You can see what actually happened at the Night Shop.
You can watch it, listen, and it's cool. You get to see us up on stage for the first time.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And I think the video turned out good. Some people digging that. Now, the karaoke song this week, you know, I mentioned that, you know, with the heart theme, I thought.
Yeah, it's inspired by Poe stuff.
Kinda. I mean, all I did was the heart. Okay.
The heart.
So we're going to play that here in a sec, but I thought you guys might dig it. It's a little, you know, weepy. So if you need to get some tissues, ladies, Or guys, you know,
go get your
go get something because you might need it when you hear
just
this.
Just go get a dirty sock.
There you go. Whatever you got.
Jerk off with it.
Until next time, keep one foot in the gutter
and your fist in someone's fucking ass.
Every night in my dreams, I see you, I feel you. That is how I know you. Go on. Far across the distance, in spaces between us, you have come to show you. Go on. Near, far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on. Just one time and last for a lifetime, and never let go till we're gone. Love was when I loved you, one true time I hold to in my life. We'll always go on. Near, far, wherever you are, I believe that the heart does go on.
Man.